In jazz circles, a jam session takes place when players gather and start playing without a whole lot of preparation. The sessions are at the heart of jazz, but they remain something of a mystery to those of us who are admirers of the music. Today we'll get an explanation of what jam sessions really are all about with a highly regarded young saxophonist whom you're listening to right now. He'll be leading a workshop Saturday morning at the American Jazz Museum on this very subject. That saxophonist is Tavon Pennicott, who is the artist in residence for this year's Charlie Parker celebration. You just were listening to him playing Never Been from his album Lover of Nature. And Tavon, so good to have you here. Welcome.
Yeah, good to be
here. Welcome back to Kansas City.
Thank you.
He's joined by Bill McCamey. He's the education director at the American Jazz Museum. And Bill, welcome to you too.
Good morning, Steve.
You're a bassist, right?
I am.
You know your way around jazz a little bit too, at least
just a
in
bit.
Theory. Yeah, okay. Well, Tavon, you know, jam sessions have been linked to jazz forever. What are they all about?
Well, jam sessions are mainly just an opportunity for musicians who aren't necessarily established in the scene to kind of show off and kind of make their debut. Or
in front of other players who maybe are the harshest judges here, right?
Exactly. Other players that are more established are, it's kind of like your business card a little bit, just like an audio business card.
And what you got, show me right now, right? That's sort of what it is.
Yeah. And it's also an opportunity for listeners to see up-and-coming guys and see who they like and just to have a good time and watching them improvise in the moment and enjoy their night.
Yeah. Bill, I gather you've done a few jam sessions in your time?
Yeah, just a couple.
Yeah, and how terrifying or how fun can they be? What's it been for you, or has it been both?
It's, you see the whole range of all that stuff.
Yeah.
I've seen at times when I lived in Philadelphia, 25 tenor saxophonists lined up outside the club to get their turn
to sit in. Oh, is that right?
And I've seen,
because that's the place you got to sort of, it's a rite of passage, I guess.
You have to go in and show them that you can hang with the pros, that you're ready for that and prove yourself. And that's one aspect of it. But at the same time, the scene itself is very supporting and nurturing and inviting situation, because the established musicians want to mix with the younger players and the new folks in town and hear their perspective and get to know them, and that openness and spirit of mentorship runs throughout the jam tradition.
As someone who might be listening to a jam session, as a player yourself, Bill, what are you listening for?
Well, you know,
how do you know if someone's got it or not?
You know, that's a matter of personal taste at a certain point. But the thing that's really interesting that I think most listeners could observe is just how you're going to see a group of players who haven't played together before, probably, and they're just kind of establishing some kind of a dialogue with each other, a musical handshake.
Yeah.
And so at the beginning of that, it might be a little bit awkward, but within a minute or two, you hear everything coalesce into music.
Yeah. Tavon, I gather, just guessing here, you've had good experiences at jam sessions and maybe not so good. Tell us about one that didn't go very well, because doesn't legend have it that Charlie Parker was playing somewhere, and was it Max Roach or Philly Joe Jones or somebody?
Yeah, there's a legendary story here in Kansas City at the Reno Club.
Yeah, the Reno Club, yeah.
Basie's drummer, Papa Joe Jones, threw a cymbal off his cymbal stand.
Because he wasn't happy with how Charlie was playing.
Right, he was not keeping the form the right way, legend has it.
Yeah, So you've had good experiences and bad experiences, Tavon?
Most definitely. Everybody does, and I remember, you know, sometimes in New York City, I'd come into the... Actually, before New York City, I was pretty comfortable. I was ready. Mm-hmm. But before that, I grew up in Marietta, Georgia, and they have a scene there. And I remember going to a jam session at this place called Churchill Grounds, and I wanted to sit in, and I came in, and I had prepared a song that I knew that I had wanted to play, but at the moment I had only learned it in one key, and one specific key that I'd practiced, and I didn't know that there was a kind of overall key that people used to play at once. I just played my key. So they began. I was like, yeah, let's play. I think it was Just Friends. Mm-hmm. It was Just Friends, this song. just friends, lovers no more, just friends, not like before. It's like it's a song like that. And they counted it off, and I was, and they started playing, and immediately I was off. I was off, and it took me, I knew it, I could hear it.
You knew it, I imagine you did, yeah.
Yeah, and then I was like continuing to play. I did switch and play, but I was using a lot of brain power, mm-hmm. more brain power than I normally do, you know.
Bill, so. You're nodding your head. You know something about keys getting switched.
Yeah, that happens. And that's one of those things about becoming a master jazz musician. You have to be ready for all those right. changes and unexpected twists and turns. Mm-hmm.
Do we know how these jam sessions got started, or is it simply just part of the music from the very beginning?
You know, that's a question without a clear answer. But for right. sure, during the heyday in Kansas City, throughout the late 20s and 30s here in Kansas City, the jam session culture was happening. And by the time Charlie Parker went to New York, it was already established there. Yeah. And just a classic scenario was that after the musicians were getting off their other gigs, late night, they would get together mm-hmm. and play what they wanted to play instead of maybe the show tunes or musical pit orchestra jobs they had or whatever the situation was.
And the idea here is what? Someone just starts playing and then how does it work?
Someone will call a tune. And usually whoever the guest is, the person that's coming to sit in with a house rhythm section perhaps, the guys in the band will say, what do you want to play? And they'll pick a tune, hopefully one they're prepared for, mm-hmm. and count it off, and off you go.
Because the pros are supposed to know what these songs are without a whole lot of wasted right. time here, right? There's
right,
a certain
absolutely.
Book of knowledge you
There's
have.
A repertoire of mm-hmm. standard tunes mm-hmm. that most every jazz musician knows.
Yeah. Well, you know, if Tavonda, if you were to lead a jam session yourself, you're sitting holding a 1932 Kahn saxophone, just yeah. beautiful, sort of a coppery, burnished gold color right in front of me here. Yeah. And you're going to play a little bit for us. If you were to lead a jam session, uh-huh. maybe give us a sense of how you would do it just walking in the door. You're the guest, yeah. and you're turning the house rhythm section. You're going to say what to them?
Okay, OJ. Hey guys, hi, nice to meet you. Yeah, nice to meet you. What kind of vibe are we going for? Are we going for like up tempo? Are we gonna play some? Okay. Oh, you wanna play more medium? Okay. Okay, let's play. Do you guys know Like Someone in Love? Oh, you don't know that? Okay. let's see. What can we do?
You're a good actor, Tavon.
Yeah. It was like, okay, let's do There Will Never Be Another You. Yeah, sure. E flat, right? Yeah, E flat. Okay, cool. Like right here? Like that? Okay. Okay. Let's see. Okay, one, two. And so on.
Yeah. Very nice. Very, very nice. And that's just how it goes.
Yeah.
And everyone's got to sort of hang with you there.
Yeah, they got to play. But
and so you'll play for a little while, and then don't you sort of step back?
Yeah, I played for a little. We do what we call the head, which is the melody that everybody recognizes. And then directly after that, which is part of the formula of what we do, but then after that we do improvisation. We play solos. And each person would take their turn. Usually the horn players begin mm-hmm. and take turns, and then it kind of filters into the rhythm section, like piano or bass, and then the drums are usually last.
So this can go on for a long time.
It could.
One song could go on for 25, 35, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
As all those guys who are waiting outside down the street are taking their turns coming in the door, right?
Yeah. Right, yeah. Right. And as someone who's leading a jam session, I could kind of monitor the length and who gets to come up and play at what time, you know.
So you sort of nod at them.
Yeah, just kind of just to keep a certain balance because just as they're trying to learn and show who they are, there are listeners there and it's still a performance per se mm-hmm. for the audience. So we want to kind of keep it organized and together. Yeah.
There's a sense I've always had, Bill, that you know, at all times, there is to be respect for the music. That idea never really goes away. At least that's in theory.
That's totally what the values of the jazz culture are all about.
Yeah, you stay true to the form.
Yeah,
and honor the form.
The music's important, and not just the art form, but literally in the jam session, the form of the song itself is sacrosanct.
Yeah, if it's not working for with some player, what happens then? As Mr. Leader, you're leading this jam session. What do you do?
Well, it depends on my personality. Whoever's leading it, there's a variety of stories, contrasting stories. Some guys that would be are what we would call, I guess, buttholes, in another sense.
Yes.
They would probably just. I've seen it when they're not happening. They'd be like, hey, stop, and then they'll just whoever's playing startled and they stop. And then
they slink away.
Yeah, and that can be very shocking. It can have all types of impacts. It could motivate the guy who was stopped to go home and practice and get a lot better. That kind of attitude is more representative of what it used to be like. You know, just like the story we just heard with him throwing the cymbal down and stopping Charlie Parker. I think he was playing too long. I think he was playing too long, and he was like, "Stop playing, or messing up the form."
But it clearly motivated Charlie Parker, because that story, at least around here, is one of those seminal, moments in Charlie Parker's life, as I've always heard it.
Yeah, it's thank God his personality was like, okay, I'm not going to deal with that. But then you got to kind of judge it, just depending. You don't want to do that with everyone, because some guys might have a lot of potential, but might not have a lot of confidence. And there's the guys that have confidence or are playing bad, then you might want to kind of stop them. But if you know that they don't have a lot of confidence but have a lot of potential, and then you want to have more of an encouraging spirit. Let them play. Let them go through it. Everybody who's a musician knows that they're not the strongest. But afterwards, maybe kind of go to them individually and say, "Hey man, you sounded great. You have a lot of potential, but maybe work on this and work on that for next time."
So. And you'd say, just humor me here. You'd say, what kind of thing might you have to work on? What kinds of things might you mention?
Depending on what they were weak in, that's what I would tell them. But say they were playing and they weren't playing the right changes, which you would say like the harmonic progression, with something that we have to learn as jazz musicians. I would say to them, "Hey, you have a really good sound. You start with the positive. You have a really good sound. You have a good time, but you got to check out some of these harmonic progressions, some of these changes, and just kind of get more comfortable with that, And they'll know what I'm talking about, because we're all working on the same thing. Yeah. Or if they're losing the form, it's like, "Oh man, you sound great. You know the harmony, but you got lost a little bit in the middle of that." Maybe try to focus a little more, or go home and work on your time. Listen to this guy.
Yeah.
You give him examples. Just basically a teacher to a student on the spot while we're all having some whiskey.
Yeah. And that's what this is all about, Bill, this sort of sense of mentoring and teaching and sort of bringing along the next generation. That's how the music and the art form has sort of evolved over the years, people learning from each other.
Yeah, that's been a part of the art form for as long as we know about. And I can't count the number of times I've seen Gerald Dunn as this.
Who books the Blue Room.
Right.
At the American Jazz Museum.
One of my great colleagues. I've seen him so many times take that young person that sat in their first time and they had a really rough run, and he'll pull them over to the side and talk to them and give them what they need, encouragement and precise musical instructions about just make sure when you get to bar 28
right.
that you play that 2-5 in the key of G and you're good to go.
I've always admired Gerald. His demeanor, the way he handles so many situations that. Yeah, it's just a class act. Where do jam sessions take place in town today, Bill? If people listening want to go hear something like this, they'd go where?
The longest running session in town is at the Blue Room on Monday night, 7 o'clock. There'll be a local house band that starts off with a set, and then it's opened up to anyone that wants to sit in after that.
So that's when those things take place, those Monday night jam sessions. Yeah.
And of course, we've got the weekends at the Mutual Musicians Foundation.
Yeah.
Late night.
Real late night.
As it's always been done
there. That's probably more of the real like grungy spirit of jam sessions.
Yeah.
But you got to be pretty hardy there. I showed up once. I actually made it, you know, 6 months ago till 2 o'clock in the morning, and they said, we don't really get going around here till 2:30 or 3, you know, 2:45. Mm-hmm. I was looking, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Yeah. I made it this far. You're still going to dog me out here.
Yeah, you know? Right. Well, the culture is that those folks, they played their job earlier in that evening.
Yes.
And that was the start of their day.
Yeah.
And,
what's the difference between the jam session and the cutting contest? Because the cutting contest is more of a – is there a distinction?
Yeah, I really don't think there is. I think that's more of a mythologized quality about competition at jam sessions.
Because one of the most legendary jam – maybe the most legendary cutting contest took place right here in Kansas City. Coleman Hawkins and Ben Webster and Lester Young, I think, mm-hmm. right down at the 18th and Vine neighborhood.
Yeah, and Erskine Hawkins – excuse me – I'm getting my facts jumbled around. Right, and so that was a famous session where Coleman Hawkins was stopping through on the road.
Yeah.
And
he was the king.
Right, at that
time,
the
reigning king. And he got his backside blistered by the guys here in town.
And right, he had been through Kansas City a few years before that, but he wasn't really expecting what he received here in the way of competition. And he stayed up all night jamming with those guys and then had to...
Had a rocket to St. Louis
exactly.
to get to a gig with
Fletcher Henderson.
Fletcher Henderson's band. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's a famous story.
Yes, indeed.
And they were, like, taking on each other, and Coleman Hawkins just couldn't keep up, I guess.
Yeah, well,
I don't... You'd pay so much money to have a chance to listen to that. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, during the peak of his fame, he was such a soloist and would even go out and do solo performances without bands. Mm-hmm. And it might have been a couple of years of him being on the road doing that before he ran through Kansas City and saw that serious environment once mm-hmm. again.
Yeah.
Well, Tavon, you're leading this jam session, this teaching about the jam session right. tomorrow morning, Saturday at 9 o'clock at the Blue Room in the American Jazz Museum. Do I have that right?
That's
Bill?
Right. We'll start in the Blue Room at 9, and we'll go off and have like instrument clinics with some great local players: Herman Mahari,
yeah.
Dominique Sanders, Matt Villinger, and Ryan Lee.
Those are good people to be leading.
Great players, yeah. And then we'll have our own jam session later mm-hmm. on in the morning, and give everyone a chance to. Play a little something.
Is it free? People just
it
show up?
It is free.
Yeah.
And for students.
This is all part of the Charlie Parker celebration, and this is this thing is sort of picking up steam now the last few years. You get a sense, Bill, that the Parker celebration has really sort of taken root here in town.
It has, and it couldn't have come at a better time. We'll be looking ahead in the year 2020 will be Charlie Parker's centennial.
Ah.
And so that's coming right up on us. And
yeah.
I think it's only fitting that this city really celebrates Parker and his legacy and embraces all that he means to the world of jazz.
More information on the Charlie Parker celebration, you can go to kcjazzalive.org. Tavon, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about yourself. Again, you're the artist in residence for this year's Parker celebration. You started playing sax in high school. What drew you to it? I mean, why saxophone? Why not trumpet or something else?
Actually, it wasn't really a choice of mine. My father was, I played drums. I started on drums. I kind of had a love for that when
Your parents got tired of listening to it, probably.
Maybe. Yeah. You know, as I was 10 years old playing drums, and it was actually in middle school, everyone was choosing instruments for the band, and I was like, okay, I'm going to play an instrument. And my dad, he was like, he's Jamaican, so he's like, Tavon, I think I want you to play the saxophone. And I was at the moment, it's like, dad is dad, so okay, I'll just play a saxophone. But when I went in there, we went into a woodwind shop, and I saw the tenor saxophone. I did make a choice specifically to tenor saxophone, even though I was very short and barely could hold it. But I did start on tenor saxophone when I was 12 years old, and I just kind of started playing it. I didn't expect.
Did you take to it right away?
No, I mean, it just kind of what happened when it just came so easily. It's just the process of learning. It was just something that I didn't have to work on too hard.
Are your parents musical?
Yeah, they're very musical. They're not necessarily schooled, but they just musically inclined.
Yeah. You then studied in Miami at the Frost School of Music, where you began playing alongside some of the leading lights of the music. But you got a big break while still in college. And this is amazing to me, when one of the biggest names in jazz, guitarist Kenny Burrell, invited you to play in his quintet. Mm. How did that come about? And that must have been a moment for you, man.
Yeah, man, it was a blessing. I was visiting a friend of mine went to school and university of mine. He's my roommate, and he decided to transfer to UCLA. And he did that. And in the process, I was actually looking into maybe moving to LA after I graduated. So this is my junior year in college. So I visited for the summer, and he had already been through a year. And as you know, Kenny Burrell is a part of the faculty at UCLA.
Right.
So I had gone and I sat in one of the classes with my friend, and we played a blues in just a song. And he heard me play then, and it was fortunate that he was doing a whole week at the Catalina's Club over in L.A. And so he asked me on the spot, he heard me, he was like, "Where did you come from, and what is your name, and what are you doing next week?" You know? Yeah, it was, and I was like, nothing. I had planned to leave L.A. a lot earlier, but since he asked me, I was like, okay. I'm extending my stay in L.A., and I got the opportunity to perform with him at the Catalina's Club for about a week.
And What was that like for you, playing, going from, you know, a player in college to playing with Kenny Burrell?
Well, musically, I had already loved the music so much that I'd heard records and stuff and everything. But the most valuable thing was just being around him and hearing his stories and hearing his the process of how he thought about choosing a set of music and mm-hmm. just being around his the atmosphere of that he created.
Yeah. I just got to ask. Over the years, you've also managed to play alongside folks like Stevie Wonder and Wynton Marsalis. Tell us about playing near Stevie, with Stevie. I'm not sure what it was, but
yeah. Well, actually, it was funny we're talking about Kenny Burrell. It was with Kenny Burrell. It was Kenny Burrell's, I think, his 83rd birthday, huh. And Kenny Burrell and Stevie Wonder are good friends, and he actually surprised him in one of our concerts at Catalina's.
Stevie Wonder
surprised Kenny Burrell and just showed up, and he came on stage. It's on video. It's a nice clip of us playing together. He sang a blues. He sang Stormy Monday. Wow. And it was an amazing experience. Amazing.
You've also played with Wynton Marsalis, and he can be pretty tough.
Yeah, he's a stickler. I had a lot of opportunities to play with him during high school. The Essentially Ellington competition, our school kind of went very high. I think we got third place in that competition. And along that process, he was mentoring us and showing us and working with us, and we got to do the concert with him as a third place finisher. We performed with him, and I've always.
Was he satisfied with your playing?
At that time, I was a lot younger, and he knew I had potential, and he would give me pointers like I was talking about before.
Yeah. What did he? Do you recall what he said to you?
He would say things like, "Hey man, you need to kind of check out some Sonny Rollins and some Dexter Gordon."
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Just kind of like yeah, and I was talking about like how I was checking out like Joshua Redman, some more modern guys instead of the older guys. And so he said,
"Go on back."
Yeah, go even farther back. Coleman Hawkins, he did say that. Coleman Hawkins, Lester Young, Sonny Rollins.
You've also played with Esperanza Spalding, one of the, you know, new, bright, huge young stars who's sort of reshaping things.
Yeah.
Tell us about her.
Well, I met her through what I was saying, the art of a jam session. I met her in a jam session. Actually, I met her longtime friend in a jam session, and I was playing, and he had seen me a lot over the weeks and months that I've been there, and he liked my playing so much, and he had gone to school with her at Berkeley, my friend.
Sure.
And she was like trying to do her next album, and I think she said, "Hey, this guy that did that is Igmar Thomas. He's a great trumpet player in New York City." And he gave me a lot of opportunities to meet her and to play on her next album. She's like, she said, "I need some horn players, a horn section. Could you put one together?" And he remembered me and put one together for that moment. And I,
as a matter of fact, I could, right? As a matter of fact.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, what a kick to have you here. I mean, just really fun. And I should just point out again that more information on this year's Charlie Parker celebration, go to kcjazzalive.org. Complete schedule, including the 21 sack salute on the anniversary of Charlie's
Birth.
Okay, which will be at a couple weekends, right?
Or
right,
close. Bill? Yeah, it's a week from Saturday.
Okay.
So this is the 28th out at Lincoln Cemetery.
Yeah, and there's more information on the American Jazz Museum website for that. I think at some point there will be, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you'll see if you Google Charlie Parker Celebration, you'll find info on the AmericanJazzMuseum.org and KCJazzAlive.org. Yeah.
Can you tell I like talking about jazz as it come through here on the radio? I could talk about this all day, and my producer's ready to kill me. I'm going too long here. I want to thank Tavon Pennicott, again, the artist in residence for this year's Charlie Parker Celebration. He was joined by Bill McCamey, Education Director at the American Jazz Museum. Gentlemen, thanks very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
We're going to go out with some more music from Tavon, and this track here is Come Get Me from his album Lover of Nature. Thanks again, guys.